The changing of the furniture that you see is something more than the mere exercise of neurotic power on my part. I wanted to signal that this presentation has been created in the last few days. I have some notes, I don't have a text, therefore I don't need a lectern. Right now, as my knees tremble, I'm beginning to think it was a mistake. I am going to blend into one presentation what I sense has been the major preoccupation of this conference with some preoccupations and thoughts of my own. And I have prepared. I prepared by immersing myself quite deliberately, as opposed to accidentally, in American cultural process. Because I sensed, before I came, that there would be American issues to talk about. I've been to this country more than 20 times since 1980. I was very nearly an American. My grandpa Sam bought a ticket in Poland. It's a familiar story. He thought the ticket was for New York. It was actually for Liverpool. He arrived in Liverpool, and he did that familiar Jewish thing. He walked the streets until he saw a mezuzah. It's by the skin of my teeth that I escaped the fate of being an American. And there will be cultural misunderstandings. In fact, I want there to be cultural misunderstandings, because in that way we can function as mirrors for each other. Me for you and you for me. What is more, I think the peak of cultural misunderstanding has already been reached. In that quite marvelous workshop yesterday on Jung and anti-Semitism, we were asked by the leaders to prepare a list of Jewish stereotypes, images, attributes, and tags that were stereotypically regarded as Jewish. And you can imagine the kinds of things: intelligence, pushy, loquacious, and so on. After a while, and in utmost sincerity, I called out, "Jewish men are good in bed." Now, in England, Jewish men are good in bed. Sorry. But it got worse, because the organizer, the leader of the workshop, who was writing these stereotypical qualities on the flip chart, heard and hence wrote, "Jewish men are good and bad." I'm going to divide this talk into two connected parts. The first concerns the relationship between depth psychology and politics. And by the way, by depth psychology, I mean not only analytical psychology, but also psychoanalysis and psychodynamic psychotherapy. So the first part is about depth psychology and politics. And the second, connected part, will consist of a critique of the mythopoetic men's movement as exemplified in the works of Robert Bly. First of all, depth psychology and politics. I have experienced a sense of comradeship during the few days of this conference, because what I sense as the primary preoccupation of the conference is very dear to my heart, and I am struggling with it. And this preoccupation concerns attempts to engage with political themes and problems with a psychological outlook or perspective. I have been so impressed and moved by the extent to which this particular engagement is preoccupying people. Now, I'm not saying every individual here puts this at the top of their list, but enough people have it high enough up their lists to make this claim valid, or at least viable. Think about some of the papers that we've heard. Think, for example, about the anguish over language, the dark issue, and the crucial importance of racism awareness. That's a political concern. Think about the worries over cultural typology. Not only what kind of a society are we, but what kind of a society do we want to be? Think about the notion of world oppression.